I, the Eretz Yisrael Dika, should be introducing Gary Turgo, the local man. But life is full of strange things, and it is indeed a tremendous chus for me to be able to do such a thing. Gary and I have been in various different forums and interacted in not as many ways as I would have liked and hopeful for the future, but whenever I've come across an issue and I've consulted with one of the leading minds of the Kiruv world, be it Rabbi Revson or Rabbi Butler or Ira Wolfson or others, the name Gary Turgo inevitably comes up as somebody who has that vision, who's taken an entire city, and together with a huge team comprised of various different organizations in various different roles, has turned it around, has turned it truly into a model city, a model Kiruv city, and somebody who who's done it in ways which are really quite creative and we really should be learning from, each and every one of us in our respective cities. The relationship of the Federation with the Frum world, the fact that the Federation provides such support for the Frum world is a very direct result of Gary's involvement. You know, I was just schmoozing with Rabbi Rubin tonight about some of the things happening and the people behind those ideas. And there isn't a project here where the name Gary Turgo doesn't come up. I think you better hear from him rather than from me. Gary, thank you.
I hope I did this right. Okay. Thank you very much. It's a great privilege to have you with us. A really great privilege for the tremendous things you're doing worldwide, not in Detroit, but literally worldwide. Since this is a Kiruv conference, and Rabbi Muller, who is one of the stars of Detroit's Partners in Torah, always says that I think it's a Gemara that says that you're always supposed to start with a joke, so I'll start with a joke or two. You could leave the baby in here, it's okay, it doesn't bother me. Man comes into a shul with a dog, and the rav of the shul says you can't bring a dog into the shul. And he said, no, this is a very special dog. He became frum on the college campus. He said, I'm sorry, you still can't bring a dog into the shul. No, you have to see what he does. He's really frum. He says, really, what can he do? He says, watch. And he sends the dog over to pick up a talus. Get that talus. And the dog takes the talus, he puts it on, makes a bracha. The rabbi is astounded. He says, what else can he do? He says, watch. He says, go pick up that sitter and say, Moda Ani. He runs over, he picks up the sitter, starts shuckling, he says, Moda Ani. The rabbi says, you know, you could make a fortune with this dog. He says, no, the problem is all he wants to do is sit and learn. The second story is kind of an old one, but it bears repeating because it's a Kiruv event. Jerry, who's a non-observant Jew, is telling his troubles to his friend Dave. He says, my son graduated high school. He went off to a college campus. And he met a Kiruv specialist. And they sent him off to Israel. And the next thing I know, he became religious. He won't eat in our house. He keeps kosher. Now he's walking around with fringes out of his jacket. He says he's a big embarrassment to me and the family. David agrees and he says, yeah, Jerry, you're in a tough predicament. They see each other a couple weeks later. He says, new, how's everything? He says, it's even worse. He says, my daughter, they found her on the campus. They sent her off to a girls' seminary, and now she became religious, and she's engaged to marry a chassid of all things. His friend David says, you know, you're really in a predicament. I have a suggestion. You should check your mezuzahs. I guess since it's a woman's conference, I should probably tell a woman's joke. Rabbi Muller said you should tell one joke. I'm on my third, so I'm like really hope somebody tells him. Rabbi Reuben, I hope you'll tell him. A guy comes into a shul, and they want to call him up for an aliyah, and they ask him what his name is, and he says, Sara Bas Moshe. So the guy says, no, I need your name. He says, my name is Sara Bas Moshe. He says, your name can't be Sara Bas Moshe. That's a lady's name. He says, no, you don't understand. We're having some financial troubles. I put everything on my wife's name. Okay, that's it for the jokes. I'm on a time frame because I know the program starts at 8 o'clock, and I will keep to my time. I'm extremely grateful to the Detroit partners in Torah, and in particular Rabbi and Mrs. Avi and Chaya Reuben, for allowing Detroit the privilege of hosting this wonderful conference. All of you have come to our community to Detroit, and your families back home who have permitted you to assume these responsibilities, you are undoubtedly the heroes of our generation. You deserve our heartfelt appreciation for your incredible efforts to unite and to encourage the Jewish people in your communities. Being the observant 31-year husband of my Eishes Chayil Malki, who is here, I know that it is the women of Klal Yisrael who are holding it all together, both inside the family and far beyond. The Yalkut Shimoni, through a remarkable story, underscores how critical the women's place in our lives is and the magical influence and imprimatur they wield, which is so vital to our individual and collective success. It's a tremendous Yalkut. The Yalkut says that there was a very religious man and his very virtuous wife who were reduced to a life of poverty. The man is out in the field one day working, and he meets Eliyahu HaNavi. And Eliyahu tells him, very surprisingly, that he is destined to be blessed with 6 years of tremendous wealth. The Yalkut says that Eliyahu asks the man, when would you like those 6 years to begin? Would you like them to begin now, or would you like them later in your life? The man, in tremendous disbelief, tells Eliyahu he has to run home and consult his wife. Smart man. The Yalkut says that as soon as she heard of this incredible occurrence, she requested that the years of prosperity begin immediately. He returns to Eliyahu in the field. He responds, and Eliyahu says that before you return home from work today, the 6 years of wealth will have commenced, and you will be tremendously wealthy. His virtuous wife says to him, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be so good to us that night, we must engage in tzedakah and chesed and personal kindness, and that's what they did. And the Yalkut reports that day by day they donated tzedakah, they were balei chesed, they reached out to their neighbors, and they recorded each act in a ledger so as never to forget their obligations every day. 6 years went by, and the Yalkut reports that Eliyahu appeared to the man in the field, and he informed him, unfortunately, that the 6 years of prosperity had ended, and it was time that night to take the entire fortune back. The man responded, according to the Yalkut, that since he had taken counsel with his wife originally when they accepted the fortune, he would only relinquish it after consultation with his wife. He went back to his wife with the crushing news that this tremendous prosperity had ended. She responded by asking her pious husband to go back to Eliyahu in the field and ask him the following question. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu could find more trustworthy people with his treasure than us, then we would give it up. And we would give up all the tools and all the gifts that have been given to us. The Yalkut reports that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard the words of this man's wife, and he tallied up all the charity and good deeds, he did not confiscate their temporary wealth. In fact, he showered upon them wealth in much greater proportions. What each of you is doing is uniting closer and closer to the world of heaven and earth. By using your personal strengths and the tremendous example of you and your family's devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you all deserve and will surely merit mida keneged mida, an abundance of Hashem's beneficence. I've had occasion to visit communities around the country who have made Kiruv in many different forms a priority. I recognize some of the inherent challenges that you face, and I know some of the many sacrifices, and I have seen and been touched by the rewards and the victories. My Rebbe, Rabbi Avraham Abba Friedman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in encouraging me to be involved in active Kiruv efforts here in Detroit, showed me an incredible Kesef Mishnah, which if I had not seen it from him firsthand, I would frankly be afraid to quote it and to tell it to you publicly. My Rebbe Zatzal taught me the words of the Rambam, who praises very specifically Avraham Avinu for being, quote, the greatest influence of his generation. The Rambam says that he illustrated to the masses the facts and created a widespread belief in one Hashem. My Rebbe showed me on that Rambam an astounding Ravid. The Ravid questions the Rambam, and he says, what about the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever? Wasn't that the greatest influence of the generation? The yeshiva Shem Ve'ever was the Punovich, the Lakewood, the Mir, all of the great and incredible yeshivas that we could roll up into our generation were embodied in the yeshiva Shem Ve'ever. They were the authentic proof providers of monotheism at its core. How then could the Ravid say how could the Rambam say, the Ravid said, that Avraham was greater than that yeshiva? Thank you. The Kesef Mishnah my Rebbe taught me said, with daring and conviction, and I will only say it exactly as the Kesef Mishnah wrote it, he responds to the Ravid and says, Ela Shahaya Kore Umafriz Emunas V'Yichud. Avraham Avinu used to call out and proclaim belief in monotheism. V'Shem V'Ever Hayu Modi'in Derech Hashem L'Tamidehem. And Shem Ve'ever made known the name of Hashem only to their students. Avalo nis'aru, likro ulahachriz kamo Avraham. They were not motivated to call out and proclaim like Avraham Avinu. V'al Kain, the Kesef Mishnah says, Gadla me'alaso biyoser. Therefore, Avraham's level was much greater than the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. It was my Rebbe, Rabbi Friedman Zatzal, who taught me that the calling out, the outreach, the kiruv which made Avraham's level, me'alaso biyoser, that much greater than even the illustrious yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. I spoke last Sunday at a Maimonides College graduation in Wisconsin, and I described how, in many ways, the Kiruv efforts of the great Mechanchim and Mechanchos in the public square are the very same methods we are already committed and practicing every week in our homes. It is a formula that Hashem Yisbarach gave to us, which is without any doubt the most powerful force for strengthening the Jewish people in our own homes and way beyond our own Dalet Amos. It is the Shabbos experience, which beyond any tool is the ultimate taste test for a searching Jew looking for answers. When I left Wisconsin last week, I had a phone call from one of the Rabbonim that was in the room. And he told me that he's aware of some people who are going to be at the WIC conference in Detroit. And he asked me to tell something over that I've said here in my community a few times. So if you're from Detroit, I apologize. We are not only enriching ourselves, but we are leading by example. By tasting and teaching from the deep wellsprings of our tradition, we are in ways that can't be measured ensuring the vitality and the strength of the Jewish people for generations to come. I told them in Wisconsin about Dan Mulhern. Dan is not Jewish. He is married to the just retired governor of our state, Jennifer Granholm. Jennifer was the two-term governor of the state of Michigan, just retired. On the Friday night after Thanksgiving, Dan Mulhern and his wife, the governor, while she was governor, and their son Jack had dinner at our home. They had heard for years from my wife and I about what Shabbos was and why we were willing to exclude ourselves out of all great and, quote, beneficial activities on Friday and Saturday just to maintain the Holy Shabbos. I was her finance chair for her elections, and I never could participate in any weekend activities. And they wanted to know why. They wanted to understand what kept us locked into our homes. I offer Dan Mulhern and Governor Granholm as an extreme example of the remarkable effect exposure to Shabbos and our Torah can have. And I give you a sample of how it affected the governor and her husband. My wife and I and our children tried with all of our might to keep the visit a secret in our neighborhood. Until, to my chagrin, Dan, the governor's husband, the first gentleman of Michigan, published his 34,000 email blog the Monday following their visit to our home. And now the entire state of Michigan heard about our Shabbos encounter in Little Oak Park. As embarrassing as it was, let me read you a small portion of his words directly from his blog. Jennifer, Jack, and I had the privilege and pleasure of sharing a Shabbos dinner with our Jewish friends, the Torgos. In their ancient tradition, Shabbos or Shabbat is a century-old ritual, and they live it just that way. For 24 hours, beginning on sundown Friday, the Torgos have no cars, no cell phones, no TVs, no VCRs, no Xboxes, no PDAs. You get it. Instead, they remember God, who did some awesome work before he rested on the seventh day. They savor in the gift of family. The supper service began with a beautiful pair of tribute to Gary's wife, Malki. Eshet Chayil. Shortly after, the father stood and blessed each of his sons with a Hebrew blessing while pressing his lips to his sons' heads. Jennifer and I reflected on our way home how this central experience of Shabbat in the Torgo family combines with the technology blackout to produce a highly counter-cultural experience. While many of us celebrated our Thanksgiving weekend as a once-a-year family gathering, bookended by snarling air and road traffic, these folks, the Torgos, experience the family gathering every week, every Shabbos, week after week. In our world, in which we're too busy to eat together, technology invades every last minute, and, quote, successful families see their children cast to the winds, these Orthodox Jews, the Torgos, have rituals that center them and build families of enviable closeness and support. Dan wrote lots more, but you get my point. For us, it was just Shabbos. Although we work full-time in endowing Shabbos with the special atmosphere from our dress to our food to our conversation that Dan and Jennifer perceived as simply extraordinary. So imagine the reactions of a member of the Jewish community with no Jewish exposure, no Jewish experience, no Shabbos, if you will. Our communities from Los Angeles to Dallas to Cleveland to Kansas City to Wisconsin are overflowing, as you know better than I, who fit that description and who would be at the very least fascinated and intrigued and I dare say may be inspired by the experience. As you, the leaders of Jewish outreach, know so well, it's not a secret society. It is available, or should be, to every member of the Jewish community everywhere. As I survey the room tonight, I cannot help but marvel why all of you are here, and what each of you means to the collective Jewish people. You are, in our world, the first line of defense against the charge that we are not doing enough to rescue the lost souls of our generation. It is a charge we face today from ourselves and Chalila in the future. I want to close with two quick stories. The first is a story that happened to me. As embarrassing as it is, my wife said it was okay to tell you. And it was very embarrassing. I was invited to one of the most liberal college campuses in the country to speak. And it was a room of about 140 Jewish men and women. And I came into the room. I actually showed up early, which was very unusual for me. And they hadn't started the program, and the young college students, men and women, were milling around in the room. So they didn't know who I was. And I started to walk around, and I introduced myself. I said hello. I was friendly with them. And then it came time for me to speak, and I spoke. And when I got finished, I took a question and answer session. Everything was going fine until a young woman in the very back of the room raised her hand. And she said, may I ask you something very personal? So I don't know how personal it is. There's about 140 people in the room, but okay, go for it. I said, it's about fences. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, when a married man and a married woman who are married to each other join as a union and a family, a fence is built around them. And that fence has no doors. And only the family is within those fences. And nobody can get in or out unless we permit it. And we don't permit it. Parenthetically, at the end of my explanation, she looked up, and about as loud as the first question, she said, boy, I wish the boys at Yale had fences. I close with the following story. This didn't happen to me. This is a story that had a tremendous impact on me. It's a story of the Holy Balatanya. The Balatanya was the great Ukrainian Hasidic Rebbe who really began a generation of world kiruv. He had during his lifetime a very close and friendly disciple who supported all of his financial needs. He was a very wealthy man. And any time the Balatanya asked him for anything, he was the first one in line. After many years of great success, this supporter and philanthropist, the Balatanya's main Talmud, fell on hard times, and he lost all of his material wealth. Every effort to regain his former place was unsuccessful. One day, the Balatanya came to his disciple, knowing that his disciple was penniless, and he told him about a plague that was sweeping through the city of Tveria in the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael. And he told him a tremendous amount of money was necessary, and he asked his formerly wealthy and now nearly penniless friend to find money to send to the Holy Land to help in this emergency. The man was heartbroken. He had no money to donate and no friends to gather money from. For weeks, the man lamented his terrible fate and his inability to respond to his holy teacher's request. One afternoon, a few weeks later, upon his arrival at home, his wife excitedly handed him a bag filled with gold coins. She told her husband to take the gold coins and give them to the Rebbe to use for his holy mission of saving Jews in Tveria. The man was ecstatic. Without a second thought, without asking any questions, he grabbed the bag and he ran to the Beis Medrash to deliver the coins to the Balatanya. He opened the bag and at the Balatanya's table, he poured out the coins on the table. The Rebbe was thrilled and extraordinarily grateful. The man returned home to inquire from his wife about the source of the money. Where did she get it? She told her husband how hard it was for her to watch him in his state and to know how terrible he felt when he was unable to respond to his Rebbe's plea. She knew it broke his heart to say no to his beloved Rebbe. So she told her husband that she decided with great sacrifice to sell their only earthly possession left, her leichter, her silver candelabra. Her husband was elated. But he said, I only have one question for you. When the Rebbe took out the coins that I poured onto the table, they shined like they had come from the mint that day. And as a result of seeing those coins shine, the Rebbe gave me a bracha. And he told me that because they shine so beautifully, that I should enter the business of gems, and he promised me that I would regain the success I had enjoyed in the past. Her husband asked her, tell me, why did they shine so beautifully? To tell you the truth, his wife said, when I returned home from the marketplace after selling the leichter, the coins were extremely dirty, and I felt it wouldn't be appropriate to use unclean coins for such a holy and important cause. So for the last few nights, while you were sleeping, I polished each and every coin so that it would shine brilliantly when they would be used for the holy mitzvah of the Rebbe's mission. As I think about that story, I really believe that what each of you are doing is shining gems, shining coins. Those are the gems of our generation. And as each of you who goes out into the world and meets other Jews, and you train them to live the life of Avram and Sarah, and you are polishing the gems of Klal Yisrael, you are, without a doubt, the great leaders of Klal Yisrael that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ordained and that Avram hoped would be in our generation. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant each of you tremendous siyata dishmaya, and may you be zocha to tremendous bracha for you and your families in the merit of your devotion to bringing light and simcha to so many of Klal Yisrael. Thank you.
I just want to thank you. That was my husband.
Oh.